future is now. And welcome to the SVK Crypto Podcast. 15 minutes of crypto fame.
My name is Charles Story. I'll be your host for the next 15 minutes. Well, scratch that. We have a slightly different show in store tonight. We have Women in Blockchain. We have a really, really exciting episode that we're really proud to announce. I'll be passing over to my co-host, Jess Holgrave, very shortly. But before I do, I just want to say that we're really proud to announce at SVK Crypto, our latest investment into blockchain, and alongside several VC firms, including Klein & Perkins and Mike Novogratz's Galaxy Digital. The investment that we made was into a project called Azerus. Azerus, for those who don't know, is a blockchain game developer, which raised $1.8 million from several different VCs, including us here at SVK Crypto. The money will fund Azerus's efforts to build out its game network, Smart Challenge, a proprietary Twitch plugin built on EOS blockchain, which basically allows users to compete for digital assets through competitive gaming challenges. We're really excited to be part of the team. And in fact, Alex, the CEO, spoke at one of our events a few months back. If anyone needs more information or wants to talk to myself or the rest of the team or wants to hear more about Azerus, please join our Telegram group, SVK Crowd. If you type that in, you will find us. So with that in mind, let's get down to the main event. On today's Women in Blockchain, we are honored and proud to have Jillian Godsill. Jillian is a force to be reckoned with. She has an amazing story and is doing many different things within the blockchain space. For example, I'm going to list off a few of the different things she's doing. And by the way, I can't wait to hear more about the other things that she's doing within the space because she's super active and super busy. She is PR and marketing head at Worbly. She's a board member at EOS Dublin. She's a broadcaster for East Coast FM. What else is she doing? She's a founder of Block Leaders. And also, she's an influencer in the space. And more importantly than that, she's really been breaking trail in Ireland, which she's going to be speaking more about. So listen, with that in mind, I can't do any justice. We can only get Jillian on the show to do exactly that. Let's go. I'm going to pass it over to the ladies to take it from here.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jess Holgrave, and I'm really excited to be a guest host today on the SVK Crypto 15 Minutes of Crypto Fame podcast. I am a co-founder of Sheos, an EOS block producer with a mission to bring more women and diversity into blockchain. On Thursdays for the next few weeks, I'm bringing you stories from interesting women working in the blockchain space to tell you about them and draw attention to the great work being done by women in crypto. You can follow me on Twitter at Jessie Block and send me suggestions of women that you would like to hear from. This week, I'm joined by Jillian Godsill, speaker, writer, broadcaster, board member of EOS Dublin, founder of Block Leaders. She's been named one of the top 50 women globally in blockchain, and as well as a crypto queen. And last year, she was shortlisted for 2 Women of the Year awards in Ireland. I don't even know where to start. How do you describe yourself?
Well, you know what? That sounds really nice. I'm going to do that, use that introduction in the future. And the irony is that, I mean, yes, blockchain has changed my life tremendously for the better in the last nearly 2 years now. But it was so funny because before that, I was totally broken and washed up and good for nothing. Isn't that interesting? It's like, you know, it's like, wow. And then I met blockchain, I say, maybe 18 months ago now, and I went, oh, that's where I need to be. And what I love to say now is, because obviously your podcast, the focus is on women. I love to say that I'm a woman of a certain age, and all of a sudden, my gender and my age is a positive. Wow.
I love that. I love that. We'll talk a little bit why you think that in a moment. Can you just tell us, though, kind of how you got
here?
I'll
do the short version, right, the best I can. I had a very ordinary, traditional upbringing, if you like, lovely upbringing. Went to Trinity College, did history and English, was hard on the milk round to go and work for JP Morgan in London. So that was a positive boost back in the day. Went over to London, worked there for 3 years, met my husband. Then we traveled to Australia and Singapore, working all the time in the fintech area, fintech PR, but increasingly moving more towards journalism. Loved it because although I was a terrible programmer, shockingly bad programmer, but I love technology, and I love people who are bright and smart and interesting. So I found it a very good place for me to talk or write about technology, just not to do the actual programming. Anyway, we came back home to Ireland, and I set up my own fintech PR company, and I started doing increasingly more journalism, which I really, really enjoy. Writing is my passion. And that all went swimmingly. And we had a big house down the country, and we had two children, and we had ponies, and we were living a very normal, happy. When you have ponies, you're very down to earth, you're very normal lifestyle. We were jetting around the world. And then the crash happened. And the crash happened in Ireland at the same time as my divorce happened. So I had a double whammy. And everything went to pot. And basically, my ex went back to the UK, and he became bankrupt. And he gave, by default, he gave all the debt, we had a debt on the house, to myself and our two children. So I had this big house with a kind of large debt on it. And I was trying to sell the house because I knew it wasn't sustainable. You know, the crash was happening. It was very, very hard here in Ireland in 2008. We didn't have a soft landing. And try to sell the house. I got an offer, and then it fell through. And I did a video in desperation to try and sell this house, big house, large mortgage. And I made this video. It was quirky. And I got a cash offer of 500,000. That was very exciting. I mean, it was 1.1 at one stage, but 500,000 was great. But the banks refused consent for me to sell the house, and they repossessed them, and they sold it the following year for 165,000. So now I am divorced, very broke, with a large debt. So I became the first female bankrupt under the new laws here in Ireland. The bankruptcy laws were reduced from 13 years down to 3. But in the interim, because of the little video I made to sell the house and the cash offer that I got, the banks refused, I began to become a bit of an accidental activist, because there was a narrative going on here in Ireland, propagated by the banks, that people were gaming the system, or things like moral hazard and debt forgiveness, all these very laden words. And people were being pointed at. So people had lost a job, or they'd been sick, or been made redundant, whatever, and they couldn't continue to pay their mortgages. They were being shamed as if they were doing it, like as if their moral compass had moved. I got more and more cross, and especially because we had such a hard crash here in Ireland, because we had the Celtic Tiger before that. So it was complete contrast. And then increasingly, a large number of men in particular started committing suicide because they were shamed for not being able to repay the debt. And this whole narrative, the whole episode, oh, I know those people not paying their mortgages, I've been 3 foreign holidays a year, crazy stuff. And I got very, very angry because I was a woman in this perfect storm where I'd lost the house, I'd become bankrupt, I had this huge debt, and I surely wasn't, you know, gaming the system. Every time the paper wanted to do a story on what was happening, They started interviewing me. So I ended up all over the place in the papers and documentaries, and then foreign TV crews would come in and they'd film me because I epitomized what had happened in Ireland, if you like, having lost everything and not being a gamer, you know, not being a bad person, whatever. And so I got very, very political, and I used to rant and rave, and I still do all the time, about how the banks were killing people, literally. And then when I became bankrupt, I realized that I wasn't allowed to run for public office because we inherited the law from the UK. Again, it was somehow seen as a shameful thing not to, you know, to have lost all your money. So I brought the Irish government to the High Court and the Supreme Court, and I argued that my constitutional rights had been infringed and that I should be allowed to run for public office. And I changed the law. Ta-da! Felt kind of exciting. And then, because I changed the law, once you change the law, you've got to do something with it. And so I couldn't just go, that's nice. And the next elections that came up were in 2014, were the European parliamentary elections. So I ran as an independent in the South Ireland constituency. And I didn't get a seat, but I got 11,500 votes, which I was very proud of. Every single one of those votes was amazing. And then my life stopped. Everything went very, very quiet. Because when you're a European parliamentary candidate, everybody wants to know what you had for breakfast, what kind of knickers you wear, everything. Your opinion is sought from so many people from all around the world. It all went very quiet. And I thought, okay, right, I'll get a job. Everything's gone. My business has collapsed. Bailiffs have called. The house is gone. I've no money. I'm on the dole. I've done a run. That's good. A political run. And so I tried a job, and I couldn't get any work. And then about 18 months ago, a friend introduced me to blockchain. I went, aha. That's what I've been looking for, because in all the 10 years of my dwindling fortunes and my disastrous, well, everything was going wrong, I kept on saying, this doesn't seem right. Why is the world like this? You know, why are these things happening? Why are bad things, lots of bad things happening to ordinary people? And, you know, I'm sure you're aware too as well that like 1% of the world owns 80% of the fiat currency. That's wrong. You know, people are being, it takes two people to raise to buy a house now. Back in the day, it would take one person. So why do two people have to work? And then childcare is so expensive. There's so many things. This world is not a great place. And my children, I don't want my kids to grow up in this world. It doesn't seem right. And I say the blockchain came. And I went, oh my God, blockchain is just amazing. And it does so many things. It upsets the apple cart. And more importantly, it makes people think again. And I call it unthinking the world, because just because it's been like that doesn't mean it has to be like that going forward. And we can make a difference. So that's my in a nutshell. That was quite fast. That was only 7 minutes.
Jess, That was amazing. And, you know, I think there's so many things that I want to ask you about. In particular, I'd love to know more about, you know, A, your kind of running for European Parliament back a couple of years ago now, and you know, some of the lessons maybe that you learned now that you think are really relevant for the crypto space. Because I think, you know, like you say, we're unlearning, we're trying to figure out new ways of operating. And I think, you know, governance and politics is all part of that. So I'm really interested if there's any learnings that you have from your kind of political experience that you've brought into this space.
Well, I think the thing, well, two things. One is, when all that horrible stuff was happening to me, and I felt very passive, was happening to me, if you like. It was so overwhelming, and I'm thinking, why is this happening to me and to other people? And that thing that I did by running for Europe and changing the law, running for Europe, that gave me power again. And I went, I'm only one person. That gave me the confidence, if you like, to go on the campaign trail, because it's quite difficult being a political candidate. I mean, I was interviewed by, I was on every TV, I was on Al Jazeera and Russia Today and BBC Two, you name it. They all came in and they filmed me. But before, when I was being filmed, I was talking about my situation. So people were not being aggressive to me. They were saying, what happened? I said, this has happened. It's been uncomfortable. When you become a political candidate, people are very aggressive because they're going to challenge you on your beliefs and your views and stuff. So rather than saying, oh, poor thing, you said, why did you borrow all that money? And why didn't you pay it back? And why do you expect the state to look at, you know, all these really harsh questions you have to answer? And so it gave me bravery, and it also gave me the knowledge that one person can make a difference. And that's why I did the political campaign. And that's why when I'm blockchain, there are like hundreds of people in this space that all believe they can make a difference. That's amazing. Yeah, people have inherently somehow this confidence in this area. And I love the one story I love to tell is I was in Kiev last year at a fashion on the blockchain conference, actually. And I met this lovely young man, Sergey, and I can't pronounce his surname, but he was one of the two guys that invented the Taler coin in Belarus. And it's like a civic project, if you like. And I was talking to him and I said, you know, did you keep any founder coins? He said, no, it was a pure, you know, civic duty job. I didn't want to make money from it. But he said, what I do, he said, obviously I'm a married man. I have, you know, family to support. The next project that I do, it'll be commercial, he said. But he said, I also wanted to make the world a better place. And I thought, wow, isn't that interesting? Because, you know, it's that kind of ethos permeates. And I know people get distracted by what price is it and price of Bitcoin, all, you know, the FOMO and all the to the moon Lambos and all type of stuff. But they are an inherent group of hardworking people in the space that want to do good, want to make the world a better place, but not at the expense of their neighbor. And that is the most important thing. Because I was talking to somebody last night. We had a very detailed conversation, in-depth conversation in the pub on Mother's Day. And we were saying, is capitalism dead? And I'm going, well, I hope to God the old-fashioned sort is the one that rips everybody to pieces and only goes for the profit and the bottom, the dollar at the bottom line, because that does nobody any good. Where if you flip it around and if you say, do you know what? If we had rather working a scarcity model, a doggy dog model, a zero sum model, why don't we work on the abundance model where there's enough for everybody and we can all work together? And, you know, if I want to be a company, I can make good product. I can serve my customers. I can look after my staff. I can do good in whatever community that I happen to be working in. And yes, we all make money because you need money to food on the table and to buy your house, your car, whatever. But the goal is not just to make money. The goal is to do something, to serve. That whole notion of serving. And yes, be successful. There's nothing wrong with being successful, being good at what you do, but not at the expense of somebody else. And I want my kids to succeed. I want to earn money again, because right now I'm broke and I have nothing. So I want to be successful again, but not at the expense of my neighbor or my neighbor's neighbor. And you know, that's one thing that really, I was at a conference last year too as well, a really interesting conference. And a friend of mine, we were talking about this whole issue. And I said, you know, I'm going to be successful again. Then he said, on a global scale, if you want to be successful again, does that mean if you look at the developing countries, he said, would you be prepared to, you know, knock your lifestyle down a couple of notches so that people in India or China could have water and, you know, and access to transport, education? And I went, of course, morally, of course, that is the right thing to do. It's tough, don't get me wrong, it is tough. So, you know, so that I maybe wouldn't have a car, or I couldn't drink nice wine, or I couldn't go on holidays. That would be tough. But, you know, it's still, we don't need to all the things that we have in our modern world of consumer. We don't need all those things. And yeah, I've been grumpy because I'm only just coming back again. But of course, yes, of course, I would be prepared to drop my standard of living if it meant that a child in Africa doesn't die from lack of water or food. You know, that's the world we live in. The new world, the blockchain world, there's so many people who think the same way. It's like, wow.
Yeah, I think it's, for me, it's definitely that idea of that we're creating something that doesn't have to be zero sum, that we mm-hmm. can have all benefit from it. And yeah, you know, maybe that does mean that we have to change things and change the way that we work. But I mean, the way that the world works today is totally unsustainable.
Look at
climate change and the IPCC reports and things like that. Like, we're going to have to change anyway in order to, you know, in order to just keep this world going, everybody needs to change and do their bit. And so I love these new models of thinking and new ways that we can start working together. I think it's, I find it endlessly inspiring when I speak to people working on.
It's huge. And there's so many smart people in this area. Tim Draper was quoted in an article recently where he said he reckoned Bitcoin would go to 4 million. But and when asked why he thought that, he said, for starters, old fiat money is controlled by politics and bureaucracy and corporations. And he said, in the cryptocurrency world, some of the brightest minds have been drawn to this space. You know, it's actually a no-brainer if you think about it. There's so many smart, intelligent, bright people working in this space. You know, we've got to win out over the old bureaucracy. I hope so anyway. I'd be very disappointed if I get to 80.
Now, one of the things that in your long list of things that you're working on is that you are founder of Block Leaders. And I think as part of that, you probably speak to some of the most amazing people in this space. And I've had, you know, I was interviewed by Fernando last year, which I really enjoyed. And I love reading things on Block Leaders. Can you tell us, you know, a bit about why you started that and why that's an important project for you?
Well, it was the brainchild of David Atkinson from Holochain. Interesting project there too as well, because they're the only coin that's gone up 200% during the crypto winter. Isn't that weird? It's very community-based. But the idea was that, and I know also in PR and journalism, when I first entered this space, you can buy content pretty much. You know, most they say, give us a Bitcoin and we'll run your press. I'm going, doesn't this have some intrinsic news value? Because I was used to pitching editorial, not advertorial or advertising. So we really wanted to have a way of looking at the world differently, not based on money exchanging hands, but based on interest. So it's been a fantastic 6 months. And we're looking for a sponsor, by the way, anyone's listening. But it's been a fantastic 6 months where we've been really delving into really interesting people and finding out what makes them tick. And I think there's a kind of a commonality with a lot of the people in this space, because again, they are looking at things differently and they want to change the world. I mean, isn't that amazing? I mean, you think about, when you grow up, you're a child, you want to be an astronaut or whatever. And then when you get to, you know, you're 12, 13, you downgrade all your expectations and you want to be a truck driver or something. I don't know. You go from astronaut and, you know, very few kids, you know, 12, 13, are they want to be an astronaut or a cowboy. You know. And increasingly, you know, you, as you get older, your dreams are downgraded the whole time. And then to meet this whole industry, this whole people, this whole ecosystem, where people are like, their dreams have no bounds. That's huge. People say, I know people who are creating a bank. Who would have done that before cryptocurrency? It's like, wow. People who are, you know, getting forward, looking at sustainable energies, looking at education. And they genuinely, like I said at the start, they were talking about the abundance model as opposed to the scarcity model. I mean, there is enough in this world to feed everybody. We know that. We just haven't cottoned on to ourselves how to distribute it and not to waste it and how not to overeat it in the developed world. You know, we are smart people. We should be able to figure out how to do that. And I think that there comes the, not just the intellect, but the will to want to change that is with these people, with the community.
Yeah, I think it's like you say, there's so many incredible people, and so I think it's awesome that you have this great platform to spread the word, because ultimately we, you know, education and bringing more people into the space and making people aware of what's happening is so critical, because I think it only takes something small to spark somebody's imagination. And you can kind of give that to them, then you're
yeah, you're 100% right, and it is exciting. I mean, well, you know yourself. We met for the first time last week in London, and it was amazing. I was like, we hugged each other, and someone else they said, "Are you friends?" "No, we've just met." But also, there's like a shorthand in this community where you say one or two words, bingo, you know exactly where they stand, and it's just, and you share all these values, and it's like, wow. That is like, and I have never made so many friends so quickly. I mean, it doesn't mean we're going to be hanging out, you know, all the time or anything like that. But I'm going, I know Jess, she's a great girl. I like her thinking. And I know that if ever I need to do something, I can just pick the phone and say, Jess, blah, blah, blah. And I know where you stand. That it's the speed of the way people connect is also amazing and awesome. You got a nice American word, awesome.
It absolutely is. And, you know, I think when we met, you heard, it was at the SVK Crypto event in London. such a fabulous event. Mm. And I try and go to it a lot. Brilliant. And you had come all the way from Dublin to join. And you asked a question about, you know, a lack of women. And
I was the first female voice that was heard in the evening.
Which is really remarkable, you know, because we were in a room of 100 or so people. And so, it was a great question to ask. And I think, highlighting that is super valuable. And I spoke a little bit about the Shios Diversity Manifesto and kind of our efforts to bring more women in. Why is that important for you?
Actually, I'm glad that you said at the very start. I talk quite a lot about women in blockchain, and I tell them my story to say, you know, things can happen. And then at the end, people say, but I'm not a journalist or I'm not a PR person. And how am I going to get into this area? And I'm going, whatever you do now, just do it in this marketplace. So I said, for me, I'm a fintech person. PR and journalism are my two skill sets. I also do a lot of talking and I chair conferences. So it's quite an easy move in that regard. But if you're a lawyer, if you're an accountant, if you are whatever it is you do, a marketeer, you know, there are jobs you can get. Now, it's a bit harder if you're like a road sweeper. I will give you that. That is harder to get into a blockchain industry. But if you are a professional, any shape or hue, or have an interest, take that interest and just, you know, pivot it into the blockchain area. So it was funny, like one of the times I gave this talk, all women came up afterwards and they were smart, smart women. But they hadn't realized that if they're a lawyer in the real world, they can be a lawyer in the blockchain world. And I even said to them as well, the other thing that's really handy, it's a very shortcut, put a blockchain advocate, you know, enthusiast in your LinkedIn profile. And see who chases you, see who comes and speak with you, and start loads of conversations. And then also, when I say women as well, go to meetups, you know, listen and learn more and chat to other women, because this is way too important. I've been going on about how I think this is going to change the world and make the world a better place. We cannot leave it to the men alone. It's way too important. And so I'm really very keen that women get in there, because when women and men work together, they can shape the world in a much better way. We know that. We have it here. The government brought in recently Jacobs for Politics. Now, it gets a bad rap, but we need to. Otherwise, we will wait another 400 years before the numbers are equalized. I mean, if women had waited to be given the vote, we wouldn't have the vote by now. And it's not that I'm aggressive or anti-men or anything like that, but we need 50%, whatever the world is, 51% of women. We need that amount of women in the blockchain, because how we develop it going forward in the next couple of years is going to be critical. And I don't want it to be just a sausage fest. I have nothing against men. You know, I was married to one once, you know, quite like men. But we need women in there too as well. We need that balance. And also, you mentioned diversity. It's not just women either, of course. It's color, it's creed, it's ethnicity, it's gender, it's, you know, all that diversity in its glorious hues. We need it all in there, because that the world is diverse. So we need the people leading this charge to be diverse and not just geeky young men. I'm nothing against geeky young men.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things about blockchain and EOS and all these things is that the ambitions are huge. The ambitions of the industry are to transform the world and everything about the world, the way that we interact with each other, the how we deal with money, how we deal with governance. You know, these are big things that are going to affect every single one of us. And so unless we have balance and representation, then we're just going to build it for the people who are involved. And so, you know, ultimately this is stuff that is going to affect everyone. And I love that idea that whatever you do now, you can just do in the blockchain world, because there's so much happening that we need, we need all of those people who do different things to start becoming aware of it. I think it's
yeah. And I mean, granted, if you are like a brickie or a plumber, that's tough. That is tough to get into blockchain. And I can't think ordinarily how, except if you're interested, go to the meetups, you know, have your voice, become like an active citizen in the world, even if you can't actually work in it. But if you are a professional of any hue or shape, there are jobs, there are parallel jobs in this universe. And in time too as well, because it'll be so pervasive, you know, your plumber will be a blockchain plumber or something, you know, you'll have his business or her business on the blockchain and it'll be immutable and transparent. And, you know, and all those cowboy, like builders, they'll all disappear because it'll be on the blockchain. We know what you did.
Absolutely. Exactly. You know, I think it's probably, there's a really cool company here in London called Verve, which is all about energy in our homes. And, you know, they're installing hardware in people's homes to help them kind of share energy in a peer-to-peer way. So I think, you know, for anybody who is...
Well, you're right. Actually, yeah, they need installers. You're right. I've actually made a mistake in that sense. Yes, there are so many jobs. The installers don't necessarily, you wouldn't necessarily say, oh, I'm an installer, I'm a cable guy, I'm an engineer, or I'm, you know, you don't necessarily say, oh, that's blockchain. yeah, there are. So you're right. There's actually, you can be a road sweeper and you'll still get into blockchain. I've decided. I've changed my tune there. And actually, I've decided.
I think the more people, the better. One of the things that I did want to ask you about is Dublin as a city. I have I've been out there a couple of times for blockchain conferences and meetings and stuff, and it just seems to me such a buzzing place. Obviously, there was a Consensus office there opened last year, and there's a Waxman office and everything. You know, can you tell us a little bit more for people who haven't been part of the Dublin scene, what that's like?
Well, I have to give credit to the Irish government, because a number of years ago, was it in the 80s, they attracted in the techs. So as a country, we don't have like oil, we don't have gas, or we don't have, we have very few natural resources, very few industries. We have people. And our people are very, very bright, and we're wonderful writers. And that also extends into software development. So techie, we are very, very smart. I'm being a bit jingoistic here. But anyway, what the government did was they attracted in the big fintechs. So now 9 out of the top fintechs in the world have their headquarters in Dublin. So it is a really happening place. So you have like Google and Facebook and Twitter and Airbnb you name it, PayPal, they're all here. And they are growing because, well, as you know, sorry to say this, but Brexit is happening. So we'll be the only native English-speaking country in the EU. We're also close to the US. So we, for a small little country, we've done very, very well. It's a bit more than Israel or Singapore did. You know, we focus very firmly on our fintech and our IT experience. And it's paid off. It has paid off. So that means now with blockchain, that's the next thing that's coming in too, is a lot of very happening companies in here, a lot of projects happening. I'm involved with the Blockchain Ireland group. We're having a blockchain week in May. There'll be hundreds of different events happening there. So the government is, it's a bit slow sometimes when it comes to the taxation, that end of things. But all the IT heads know that this is the next big wave, and including this AI. We've got a lot of AI stuff and machine learning, all those different technologies as well. So it's, yeah, Dublin is happening. It's it's a real buzzy. There's a lot of people employed in tech. We have the financial services as well. Oh, it's fun. It is. It's very accessible. I mean, London. I mean, I love London. I used to live 3 years in London. I loved it. But Dublin is very small. You know, so you can get about, and it's a buzz. It's a very friendly city. It's safe. I was in South Africa recently, and my taxi driver said, you know, if you broke down, someone comes to help you. You don't accept the help. I'm going, oh my goodness, that would sound so strange. So it's a safe city, and it's warm, and the Guinness is very nice, and the pubs are buzzing. You know, it's good social life. It's I like Dublin.
And you're a board member of EOS Dublin. Which is a block producer on the EOS.
Oh, they're brilliant. They are brilliant. Sharif and Sam are just fantastic, and the rest of the team. I have a lot of fun because I do the EOS podcast called Ignition. And I love that because, again, I get to talk to a lot of people in EOS. And I actually think, and again, I'm showing my bias here, there are some amazing people on the EOS blockchain in particular. There's a lot of really, 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 really huge projects that are interesting and thoughtful. And they're just, I mean, the fact that it's a governed blockchain as well, I think that says a lot about the ethos behind the people that are drawn to it, you know, and there's a lot of women in EOS, which is very nice, including obviously you guys, but that is nice. There's more women in EOS than in other chains, I think. And and the guys are just fantastic. We're meeting up on, we came over to London, especially for the meetup. And we're going to do some events coming up shortly here in Ireland with EOS. We're going to bring in the Crypto Curry Club, and we're going to do pints and blocks, or blocks and pints. So there's a lot of things happening with EOS here in Dublin too.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I will I'll try and come over for a pints and blockchain event, that's for sure.
We're doing that with Steve. We did it after the meetup, went on to pints and blocks. We'll be at the wrong hotel was on meetup. Anyway, it didn't matter, but it was good crack. It was good because that's the other nice thing as well. The social is very good. People are very jolly, and they hang out, and they you know, have a bit of crack afterwards. That's good fun too as well. It's not very nerdy and go home and code. It's very sociable.
And what else about EOS Dublin is exciting? You know, as a block producer, obviously, you know, every block producer is out there canvassing for votes and trying to make an impact on the EOS ecosystem. As EOS
well,
Dublin,
the fact we do the Ignition podcast, I really like that because we're reaching out with people across the world. There's a lot of education. There's a boot camp up there. All these courses on EOS that are being delivered for free in different areas. It's a growing resource. Plus, also, Sharif is planning, and Sam are planning, having like a dictionary or a list of all dApps in this space too. So people can go on, like going on to Amazon looking for your book, looking for your dApp, whatever. So there's a lot of push behind providing extra content for people. and resource and helping people get up to speed. And we've been having meetups as well. Not as warmly attended as the SVK crypto ones. That was very impressive, standing room only. But we have been having meetups and we're going to have more of them too as well, just to educate people on what's happening and starting from that base point, because sometimes you forget. I mean, I remember the first meetup I went to, and the question was asked, who knows or who has a crypto, has a coin? And but two people put their hands up. And now, of course, you go to those meetups and people all put their hands up because they've all got coins. But there are people who haven't got there yet either. So there's a huge area of education that needs to be done for people who are on the outside and are looking in and think it's all a Ponzi scheme. And that's what EOS is very keen on doing too as well. And I'm also very much involved with that, trying to reach people who wouldn't otherwise maybe have looked. And I mean, I'm trying to in my writing, in my ordinary freelance writing as well, just to say, hey, guys, have a look at this. This is so important. So education, access to dApps and projects, because Sharif and I are working on a couple of projects as yet to be named. That's kind of fun too as well, to be able to work with people, actually think of ideas myself, not just to interview people, to actually have some ideas. And of course, they're in the horsey range. Of course they are. But that's because I have my interest.
That's awesome. I love the idea of a place to go to find dApps, because I think that there's always so many innovations and new projects coming out there that it can be hard to kind of keep track of them. And particularly if you're not even, part of the EOS ecosystem, but are just entering into it, then having a sort of single place to go to find out what you're looking for.
And they're great guys. They're just so laid back. Sharif is so laid back. He's horizontal. I love that. How are you doing? I'm fine. I'll be like, oh, something going on. He goes, yeah. Have you thought about it this way? Oh, no, I haven't, actually. So I love working with him. He's so cool. He keeps me calm.
It sounds like a super. And anything else that you're working on that's exciting for you at the moment?
Can I throw in something that's a bit left of center, but it's very fun? When in 2013, the most popular book in the world was 50 Shades by E.L. James. Now, I read it and I hated it because I'm a writer, and it's fan fiction based on Twice Horrible. As a writer, I could write something better than that. And so 2013, I was so broke. I had no money. I was on the social, couldn't get work and, no money. So I said, I'm going to write this book. So I wrote a trilogy. But I also put in all my activism and my feminism because I hated the sheer inanity of the main character in the 50 Shades books. So I had such fun writing them. And I was hoping to sell enough books that maybe I could save my house. But that didn't happen. So then I had an idea. That was back in 2013, whatever. I saw a couple. I mean, they were well written, well received. It is erotica. So, and I called them originally the Cougar Diaries, and I gave them a pen name by Aoife Brennan, a very Irish name. But I've now just rewritten the first one again. And I renamed it. And I've called it Confessions of a Cryptomaniac. And I put my name on it. So I'm hoping that I can, if I get enough copies, I'll be able to buy some land for our rescue horses. So that's my. I have to edit the other two as well. Put more Bitcoin in there.
Amazing. So I this is certainly the first crypto erotica that I've had. I don't know if there are any others out there. Maybe people listening have got some others they can share with us. But I think that sounds
well. I'm very proud of my writing, because if you did read the three novels, you'd understand what happened to Ireland in the post-Celtic. So they are it's if you want to learn about a country, just as. Yeah, exactly. This is the sex in there, that's all. But you understand Ireland much better and the sex. So that's kind of fun.
Oh, well, when those are ready.
I'll send you the link of the first one. I have it up on Kindle, so I will send that link to you. I have to do the other two, but the first one's rewritten with some Bitcoin in there and blockchain.
Fabulous. And if people want to find you or follow you on Twitter, how do they do that?
Okay, it's my name again. So Gillian Gotzel, I'm on Twitter. And on LinkedIn as well. LinkedIn's a very good place as well. Again, my name is Gillian Gotzel, Gillian with J and Gotzel with G. Otherwise, because if it was Gillian with a G, I'd be a horse, I'd be a Gigi. So that's why it's with a J. There's a horse theme going on here, an equine theme. I've had a lot of fun. Thank you so much for bearing with me. It was brilliant. Thank you. And you know what I love too as well? And it's really, really important, which I love anyway. The fact you ask me different questions, I have to come up with different answers. And that's very good for the old brain, isn't it? Because I'm going, I hadn't thought about that. And I don't even mean the one about the block one, just about your views, what I learned from the political campaign. That's a good question. So thank you. I love, love tough questions. They were very good questions.
Gillian, thank you so much for joining us today on the show. It's been a pleasure to have you.